Okay, we are at the very top of Yud Aleph Amud Beis, 11b, the second line, the next sugya. Ve Amar Ula Amar Rab Elazar. Another, these are all statements of Ula and the name of Rab Elazar. And some are shorter ones, some are longer ones. As a matter of fact, we did that one. I'm sorry, we did that sugya. So we're a few more out. We just quickly did that yesterday. So we're going to move ahead to about the next sugya, which is going to be about 5-6 lines. Let's get it up there. Coming up. Okay, so we're 6 lines from the top. Ve'amar Ula Amar Rab Elazar. Ula said the name of Rab Elazar. We're now going to discuss, how do you acquire an animal? When you buy something, you have to make a kinyan, you have to make an acquisition. What formal action do you have to do to make a kinyan? So Amar Ula Amar Rab Elazar, he says the following. Behema gasa, a large animal. How do you acquire an large animal? Niknes b'meshicha. You acquire with meshicha. Literally, meshicha means to draw something near to you, to pull something towards you. Now, in footnote 10, he says, livestock and animals are generally divided into 2 categories. A behema gasa. Gasa literally means thick. A large animal, and behemadaka, a small animal. Small animal. What does that mean? Big animals, that includes cattle, horses, donkeys, and mules. Those are big guys. As well as all large wild animals. The second one consists of sheep and goats. The biggest a sheep you can even pick up, right? A horse you can't pick up. So, the big animals and small animals. So Ula teaches us that large animals, you know, you're not going to be able to pick up a large animal. Other animals, you can just pick them up, but a large animal, you can't. So we do a kinyan of meshicha. That's what it's called, a kinyan, an acquisition of meshicha, which means drawing near. So how do you draw an animal near? One of 2 ways. Either you pull it, okay, or you draw an animal from one domain to another domain. So either you pull it from the public domain, let's say an area that belongs to the seller, everybody, into the buyer's domain, or into a public area set aside for temporary use for individuals, which is a complicated thing. But anyway, you're drawing it into your property. Now, so the buyer may either physically pull the animal, you just take it and pull it, or he can cause the animal to move by hitting it with a stick or calling it. But the idea is you've got to draw the animal from one rishus to another rishus. You've got to bring it into your rishus. So the simplest level is right outside your property line. You pull it or call it or you hit it and you bring it into your property. And that's how you acquire it. It's besides money, cash. You know, it's not such a great kinyan. The real kinyan is doing an act, a demonstrative act, showing that you are the owner of that animal. Okay? So therefore, the best way to do that, says Ula in the name of Rab Elazar, is to draw the animal to you. That's his statement. To which the Gemara now asks the question, it appears as a Mishnah that disagrees with Ula, which is a big problem for Ula. Mora asks, Vahatnan, we learned in the first parak of Kiddushin that the way you acquire an animal is with, it doesn't have to go that far to pull it, but even Mesira. What's Mesira? Okay, so let's take a look at footnote 12, tells us what Mesira is. Mesira, which literally means handing over. So what does that mean? That consists of the owner transferring the animal to the buyer by handing him its reins or its mane. A lot easier than pulling an animal. The cow's got a rein on top of it. He just hands him the reins. There it is. You got the reins. Finished. Right? Now, in the brackets, he brings out a machlokas in the Rishonim. It's where the reins have to actually hand it over, or if it's enough for the seller to tell the buyer to take hold of the reins. But it's a much smaller activity. So what the Mishnah is saying, it's not necessary for the buyer to cause the animal to move into its domain and to draw it near. It's enough if the buyer just takes hold of the reins without moving it from the domain of the seller to the domain of the buyer. So Mishnah says, you don't have to do so much to acquire a big animal. Okay, so that's the question, that it's enough with that. So it's a question on Ula. Ula seems to say you have to a higher level of activity of drawing it to you. Well, the Mishnah says all you got to do is hand over the reins. So what's he going to answer? Answer is, who, the Amar, Ula, he's going to hold like a different Tana that supports his position. Ki hai Tana, like this Tana that we're going to learn in a Braisa. De Tanya, for it was taught in a Braisa the following thing regarding animals, big and small animals. They give us a number of opinions. This opinion says, V'chachamim omrim, the rabbis say, when you want to acquire a big or a small animal, zu v'zu, this and this, meaning whether it's a small animal or a big animal, the way you acquire it is b'mashicha. You acquire it through pulling it. You got to pull it. Oh, that's a reza chachamim. So Ula is going to rely with that opinion. He has the basis of the Chachamim on his side. While on the other hand, Reb Shimon says, Zu v'zu behagbo. Much stricter. Small animals and big animals, you have to lift them. Now we got a third thing now. Lifting them.
Big ones too.
Yeah, well, how are you going to do that? That's going to be a problem. We have to look at the commentary in a minute. How do you lift? But a sheep, I understand. I pick it up. And that is the classical Kenyan. That's why I want to buy this tape recorder from you. The classic Kenyan is, pick it up. When I sell the chametz for you, I tell you to take the pen and pick up the pen. You pick up the pen, you acquire the pen. That's the best Kenyan. Obviously, it's the best Kenyan. You're lifting it up. Right? Now, question is, how do you lift up a big cow? So, footnote 14 is going to tell you how to lift up a big cow. The Gemara in Kiddushin explains that according to Reb Shimon, lifting of a large animal can be affected by causing it to walk onto a pile of branches. So that is thereby elevated off the ground. That's effectively lifting it off the ground. So therefore, Ula has whom to rely on. So it comes out, there's three opinions as to what Kenyan is required. And Ula is going like the Chachamim. So this is the end of the Sugya. Very easy Sugya. Look at Sugya number 9. The central issue, what is the method of acquiring a large animal? Point 1, statement of Ula in the name of Rabbi Lazar. A large animal is acquired through Mashicha, taking to one's domain. Right, taking it into your domain. Question, a Mishnah states it's acquired through Mesira, handing over the animal, and Mashicha is not required. You don't have to do that much. The answer is Ula holds like the following Tana Nebraisa, which says, for Chachamim say both large and small animals are acquired through Mashicha, and that's who Ula is going to hold like. Reb Shimon says that both large and small animals are acquired only through Hagbah, lifting, much stricter. So Ula holds like the Chachamim. So how do we resolve this sugya? There's a machlokas as to the method of acquiring a large animal. Reb Shimon says only through hagbah. You have to lift them up. Chachamim say even through mashicha, just drawing it into your domain. And Ula is going to agree with that position. And this Tana in Kiddushin says even through mesira, just by handing over the reins. So there's a three-way machlokas. And it's unresolved as exactly what's the method, but Ula at least has an opinion that supports him. Okay? So maybe we should just add a couple words here. Handing over. Let's add the words. The reins. Let's add. Didn't spell that right. Let's add the word the reins. And lifting. Let's just say a large animal is lifted by causing the animal to step upon branches that will cause him to be in a higher position.
So it's unresolved.
In the Gemara, it's unresolved. We have to look at the poskim to see the resolution of what the halacha is, and it's not so simple. So I didn't put it down, but it's unresolved. It's a machlokas, a three-way machlokas. Okay, we go on to the next sugya now. Very little sugyas over here. The next sugya. That's why it's a nice, easy Gemara today. I don't have to rack our brains. Next statement. Again, another statement. Rabbi Ula, the name of Rabbi Lazar. Ve'amar Ulam Rabbi Lazar. Ula says in the name of Rabbi Lazar. Now we're talking about brothers who are dividing up an inheritance from their father. Say, very, you divide up the property of all these things. Remember, the brothers, most likely, everything they have is from their father. But we're not talking about, brothers who are, moved out of town and making their own living. We're talking about brothers, let's say, three brothers on the farm. They're working on the father's farm. Father dies. And now they have to divide up what they have. So really, isn't everything that they have belong to their father? So let's see how far this goes. So Gemara says, Ula said the following, Ha'achim shechalku, brothers who come to divide up the estate of the father. And they're trying to calculate, you see, what they already have received. What does that mean? In other words, you have to figure, well, you're going to get an inheritance. So, you just don't look at the land. You have to look at all movable objects, everything that has to be decided. To what extent? Even ma sha'alehem shami. Even the clothes that they're wearing, we have to evaluate that as part of the estate that was left. The guy, the guy has a fancy suit that's worth $500. The other brother didn't go for fancy clothes. He's just wearing a simple t-shirt worth $5. So now they're dividing the estate. Well, listen, you have a $500 suit. Where'd you think you get that from? Who did that belong to? Now just think about this. When you buy clothes for your children, who owns the clothes? The children aren't buying it. They don't have their money. Father is buying the clothes.
That's like a gift to the children.
Well, is it a gift? What if the father takes and says, I want the suit back? If the son would take the father to a din Torah, who would it belong to? It belonged to the father. It belongs to the father. So therefore, when the father dies and you like to have fancy clothes, the father bought you fancy clothes, but you don't own it. It belongs to the father. Now that we're going to take a cheshbon of how much we inherit, you're starting $500 behind the eight ball because you already got $500 more than everybody else. So Ula says we evaluate that. Let's take a look at footnote 15. If the clothes that the brothers are wearing were purchased with funds of the undivided estate, the court will assess the clothing and count its worth towards the portion of each brother. You calculate the clothing. That's what the brothers are wearing. What about what their kids are wearing? Uma, Sha'al, B'neim, Ubenoseim, that which their sons and daughters are wearing? Ain't Shaman, we don't evaluate that. That is not calculated. Why is that not calculated? It doesn't seem to make any difference as to why. So footnote 16 says, since it's not usual for sons and daughters of claimants to come to court, usually they're not, little kids don't come to court. The claimants waive their rights to demand evaluation of children's clothing rather than subject them to the humiliation of coming to court and having their clothing assessed. In other words, it seems to be a traumatic experience. Going to court and, figuring what it's worth. So I'm going to get all scared. So everybody kind of is moichel on that. They say, listen, we're not going to make the kids go through this. No, we're thicker skinned. Okay, I'll let you check what my clothes are worth. But little kids get all scared. And everyone agrees, okay, what the kids have, we're not going to make part of the cheshbon. Now, he puts down here, Tosos notes, this applies only to everyday clothes. Shabbos and holiday finery are assessed along with the clothing of the parents. That's very, really expensive. So real expensive, no one's willing to be Michael on that. If you got really expensive clothes, I don't care. The kids will... Yeah, and then, the fact is, I guess, maybe they're not wearing their Shabbos clothes. You can check it anyway. Anyway, so what do you see? So we evaluate the clothes that the brothers have as part of the calculation of the inheritance, But what the kids have, we generally do not include that. That's a statement. Now, Rav Papa is just going to say another statement, not necessarily arguing with Ula, but adding on. Papa will say, and you know what? Pa'amim sometimes, af ma'ashaleim ain't shaman. Even sometimes what they're wearing, they don't evaluate either. Why? Because you could have certain scenarios where the brothers are willing to allow one brother to have more expensive clothing and not deduct it for him. How could that happen? He's going to tell you the following scenario. Mashkach asla, it will come out in the possibility of begodal achay, the eldest of the brothers who has to wear him, wears these clothes, and we want him to wear these expensive clothes. Why would we want him to wear these expensive clothes? Because, he says, the nichale, because the other brothers are happy, delish tamun mile, that his words will be heard. Meaning to say, what if the older brother has to deal with the banks, creditors, debtors, and you know, if a schlepper comes along with his shmatas and says, you know, I want to talk to you, he says, get out of here. The guy dresses fancy clothes, people are going to listen to him. Clothes make the man. So if, let's say, one of the brothers has been involved in trying to, you know, wrestle away $500,000 of property that they believe belongs to the father, and the guy's going to have to go to lawyers and this and that, and he's got to look respectable, the brothers are willing to let him wear fancy clothes, and guys go, listen, you know, I'm going to wear fancy clothes, but I don't want you to deduct this from my, I'm doing this for the estate. It's like the executor's expenses, so to speak. So that they're willing to forego. And that's footnote 17. When the oldest brother tends to the affairs of the state, it is in his brother's interest that he dress well, that he will command attention and respect when engaging in business on the family's behalf. Thus, since the brothers benefited from the dignified clothing of the eldest brothers in the past, they cannot say now that he should pay for those clothes. Okay, Tosus mentions the brothers have the right to protest initially against using it if they don't feel it's necessary. But once they agreed that he should wear fancy clothes, they're not going to say, well, now just sell those clothes and let's know. He doesn't have to calculate that. All right, again, simple idea. And the notes are just as simple. Sugya number 10, daf 11b. Central issue. Are clothing that are worn evaluated in brothers split an inheritance? And that's basically the two statements, and the resolution is as such. If brothers split an inheritance, we evaluate the value of the clothes each brother is wearing. It is as part of his share, but not what his children are wearing. Second point, we don't even evaluate an eldest brother is wearing who pleads on behalf of his brothers. Okay, another simple sugya. We're just rolling along. Next sugya. Next sugya, please. That jumped over there. Let's try it again. V'amar Ula Amar Rav Elazar, Rav Ula of Elazar said another statement. Now here's an interesting scenario. Let's say I give you something to watch for me and you're a shomer for me. I'm going out of town. I want you to watch my cow. Okay. And I'm going to wait for 3 weeks. Now guess what? You're the shomer. And then you forgot that in the middle of 3 weeks, you have a simcha. You got to go out of town for a day. But you already promised you're going to watch this cow. So what do you do? You, the shomer number one, you call up your good friend Chaim Yankel, who lives down the block, and say, Chaim Yankel, do me a favor. I've committed to watch this thing for 3 weeks, but I'm away for a day. Do me a favor. Can you watch the animal for me for this one day? I said, sure, no problem. So the second guy watches the animal. But while the second guy watches the animal, a robber comes along that night and steals the animal.
So who's responsible?
So, the question is, what would you say? Let me hear what your opinion would be. Now, what happens? The next day, the first shomer comes and says, where's I had the door closed, everything. It was a break-in. Okay, well, what can we do? Well, 2 weeks later, the owner comes back and says, where's my cow? Well, it was a break-in. And let's say the first shomer was a shomer chinam. Shomer Chinam, a free watcher, does not pay for break-ins. He'll say, well, listen, it got stolen. Oh, really? Okay. By the way, just so you know, it wasn't really stolen from my... He said, what do you mean stolen? Your house looks pretty good. Nothing doesn't look like anything got messed up. Well, really what happened was I was away for a day. I gave it to my friend. My friend was a good guy. He locked up his door, and it got stolen from his house.
So it'd be...
Or, you know... Let's say, okay, look, there's a lot of scenarios we can think about over here. Let's say I was a free watcher. I told my friend to watch it for free. What if I was a free watcher and I go to Chaim Yanko and say, you know, I'm going away for today. Can you watch it? He says, you know, I'm very busy. I don't want to hassle this. Okay, I'll pay you to watch it. So the Shomer Chinam makes the second guy a Shomer Sachar. Or let's come up with another scenario. Let's say the first Shomer was a Shomer Sachar. Let's say the original guy was paid to watch it. Now he goes to his friend and he pays him to watch it. Or maybe he says, you know, just do me a favor and watch it for nothing. So I got a whole bunch of variables going on over here. What do you think the halacha will be in these variables? What would you suggest?
So if they both were free, then it says that they're both free.
And you say, doesn't have to pay.
If the second one was, the second one agreed to pay money, then he has to pay.
And pay who?
Well, he gets the cow or pays the first guy, and then the guy gives the money back because he now has the money.
Okay.
And if they were both paid, then the first guy has to give the money to the second guy.
First guy gives.
If they're both paid, if they're both.
But the damage happened with the second guy.
So he still gives the first guy. He doesn't pay, but he now has the animal to get back.
Okay. So when would the first guy ever be chayiv? Would he ever be chayiv?
So
what if the first guy was a shomer sachar and now he made the second guy?
Yeah, the second guy was free and the first guy was paid, then he'd have to come.
Okay, anybody have any other suggestions? They all sound like reasonable suggestions. Any other ideas? Okay, well, let's see what Ula has to say. So he says the following, and this is the buzzword you should remember. This is the name of this sugya, which really is mentioned in many other places in Shas. Shomer Shemasar L'Shomer. A guardian who hands over to a guardian. That's this case. Shomer Shemasar L'Shomer. So let's see what Ula says. Potter, the first shomer is Potter. He doesn't have to pay, which means obviously the second one is chayv to pay. Now let's take a look at footnote 18. Now, first of all, you're allowed to do that even initially. So look right away. Although one shomer is not allowed to transfer the deposit to another shomer, you're not allowed to give it to another guy without the owner's permission. But doing so is not considered an act of negligence. And it does not obligate the first shomer any more than he was before the transfer. That's what Rashi says. In other words, really, you're not, I gave you the thing to watch. I told you to watch it. I told somebody else to watch it. Now, the question is, now that you gave it to somebody else, is that considered a negligence on my part or not? So Ula says that's not negligence. I gave it to another responsible person. Now it got damaged. First guy is Potter. Now, the question we have to think about, and it's not clear over here, what he says, that the first kasson is exempt, but wait a minute, does the second one have to pay? Let's say that they're both shomer chinams, and it was a break-in. So it comes out, nobody pays. Right? I'm a shomer chinam. Do I pay if it gets lost or stolen? No, as long as I wasn't negligent, I don't got to pay. I gave it to another guy. And he wasn't negligent either. It would come out that everybody would be potter.
The owner's on the hook.
And the owner is stuck. The owner is stuck. Because, he did what, in other words, whatever he would be potter for, if the thing would be with him, then the other guy is potter as well. Now, on the other hand, this gets very complicated. So the simple case is a shomer chinam gave to a shomer chinam and it got stolen. Okay, you're potter. But what if the first guy was a shomer sachar? He gave it to a shomer chinam and now it got lost and stolen. Then the first guy's got to pay. In other words, the first guy can't be any better off than what he would have been had it been with him. Okay? So he's potter if he would normally have been potter. But if he'd be chayv, then he'd have to pay. That's what it will be. But basically, as long as the first shomer would not have had to pay had it been with him, in other words, giving over to another person does not make it that it is negligence on the first shomer's part. We could have said, listen, by you giving another guy, it's total negligence. Who told you to give another guy? I didn't ask you to give another guy. No, we're saying, no, that's not negligence. I gave it to a good person. It's a good one. We're not talking about giving it to a cotton. No, you gave it to another guy. A good guy, and he wasn't negligent. So the fact that he was another guy doesn't mean there's any negligence there.
But one second, it sounds like he's not, the first shomer is not actually allowed to give.
You're not, initially you're not allowed to do that.
Yeah, but there doesn't seem to be any consequence that he did it anyway.
Well, it depends, because if it would have been stolen from him, there wouldn't have been any consequence either. If I kept it in my house, and a guy broke it and stole from me, and I was a shomer chinam, I wasn't negligent. I gave it to another guy. The other guy also, the door was locked. And there was no negligence there either. So, that in that kind of case, the owner might have said, wait a minute, why did you give it to that guy? Says, why not? Give it to the wrong guy. Ula says that giving it over is not considered an act of negligence. Then we have to look exactly what was the responsibilities, then we'd have to evaluate it from that. But pater means that the giving over is not a cause to make him chayiv. But if he was a shomer sachar and it got stolen, well, then he'd have to pay anyway, because even if it was by him, he'd have to pay. But let's say, all things being equal, the first shomer would have been pater, but the fact he gave it to the second shomer does not make it worse for him. That's what Ula says.
We didn't answer if the second guy was a shomer.
So let's take a look. Now he's going to elaborate. Ula's going to elaborate. The Lomi boy, and it goes without saying, for sure he's pater. Shomer chinam shemasel a shomer sachar. If the first guy was a shomer chinam, and now he pays the second guy, it goes without saying the first guy is pater, because he enhanced the shmirah.
Right.
That's for sure. Look at footnote 20 and 19 and 20. No, let's look at 20. Hello. Right? An unpaid custodian is exempt from liability for theft or loss, and certainly for unavoidable accidents. Here he's exempt just as he would have had the deposit still been in his possession, since he was not negligent. Look at this now. The second, what about the second shomer now? The second shomer is a shomer sagar, however, is responsible for the loss, and the halacha accords with Rav Yossi, who rules that he must pay the original owner rather than the first shomer. We're not going into there, but the other Gemara says, so if the second guy is a shomer sagar, he has to pay. Who's going to pay? Well, it doesn't make sense to pay the first. Can you imagine what happened? The second guy was a shomer sagar. It gets sold. The first guy says, where's the thing? It got stolen. Well, you better pay me. And then he takes the money. Then the owner comes back and says, well, what happened? Oh, it got lost or stolen. So I don't have to pay you. So, it could come out that the first shomer is going to make money on this deal. So Rabbi Yo says, no such thing. There's no way the first shomer is going to make money on this deal. But be that as it may, so that's where he's upgraded. He upgraded the watching. So he's sure, that's what it says the next line. The look what he did. So for sure in that case, we gave it to better shomer. De'iluye ali l'shmirah. He upgraded the shmirah. He made even a better shmirah. Because a paid custodian is going to do a better job. So that's for sure. Goes without saying. Ula says he's punter there, but look how far he goes. Eli says even more. Afilu shomer sachar shemasar l'shomer chinam. Even if the original owner paid the first guy to watch it. And then the first guy turns around and asks the guy to watch it for free. Well, what's happening then? Dahashta garuye gare lishmirasa. Now he's making the watching worse. Because I was paid. So I was going to watch really well. I told the other guy, do me a favor. Guys, do me a favor. I've not upgraded. I've diminished that. Look, he says still, Nami Potter. He's still putter, provided it was something that the first guy would be putter for. Let's say an accident. Remember, the first guy's a shomer sachar. If it's lost or stolen, he'd have to pay. But let's say it's an accident. So therefore, it has nothing to do with my degrading, diminishing the watching. Because why do we say, why is it still okay? Sherei Masar Leben Das. He gave it to a competent person who would watch it, and therefore there's no negligence. So therefore he's not more liable than he was before the transfer. Now, obviously, if he was a shomer sachar, he was a shomer chinam, and now it gets lost and stolen, that first shomer still got to pay. It was lost and stolen. But what does a shomer sachar not pay? Accidents. An accident, then he'd be potter. So that's Ula's opinion. Ula's opinion says, me giving it to another shomer, doesn't matter, upgrade it, it doesn't affect anything, I've done my job. I gave it to an intelligent person.
So I understand that. So if you have a cow, whatever, and you give it to a guy, and you know that he has, you know, 6 medical locks on his barn and stuff. He goes and he gives it to a guy, and he has a nice hook on it. And all he has is a hook, And so sure, someone came in, they ripped the screen, and they unhooked it. So as the first, as the guy who gave it over, you chose who you gave it to. And so you kind of lost control there, but this is saying, so what if it was...
It doesn't matter, because if now you're saying got stolen,
yeah.
If he's a Shomer Chinam, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Unless he writes into the thing. I write that you cannot give it to somebody, and if you give it to somebody, but just generally assume we not. This is all Ula. But guess what? He's not the only opinion in the world. Rava Amar, Rava says the opposite. Rava says, Shomer Shemasar L'Shomer, if a guardian gives it to another guardian, Chayav, you gotta pay. And look how far you gotta pay. Look at footnote 23. Even if an unavoidable mishap was claimed, it was an accident, you still gotta pay. Now, when's the only time you pay for unavoidable mishaps? If you were negligent. So he's gonna say like this. He's gonna say, lo me boy, and goes without saying you have to pay. Where Shomer Socha Shomasa Shomer Chinam, when you, the first guy, was a paid watcher, and you gave it to a Shomer Chinam, was not a paid watcher. That for sure goes without saying you'd have to pay, because Digaruye Gare Lishmira, so he made the watching worse. But not only that, even if he was a free guy, and he gave it to another guy and he paid him, still says, Rava, you're chayim. Well, why should you be chayim then? This is the svar he says. The Amar Lei, he says like this. You know what? You are a shomer chinam. So what would happen if it gets lost or stolen? What would happen? What happens if it gets lost? What happens if an accident happens? So what? Tell me exactly what happens. The owner says, can I have my collar? Oh, you won't believe it. A lightning bolt came and killed the animal. So the owner says, fine, good, everything's fine, goodbye? Or one more thing has to happen? The shomer has to swear. To be potter, he has to swear. If he said, it was a lightning bolt, okay, we go to court and swear? No. Not going to swear, then why should I assume it was a lightning bolt? Maybe you were negligent. The shomer, to be potter, has to swear. Now, when I asked Earl to watch my animal, you know what? So I know Earl's an honest guy. And I figure, if an accident happens, he'll swear. So what to do? Earl gave it to Schmoigli to watch it also. So Earl says, I'm sorry, it was a big accident, but it happened was in Schmoigli's house. So now who's going to have to swear? You can't swear, Earl, because you didn't see what happened. Schmoigli's going to swear. I'm going to say, listen, I don't know who Schmoigli is. I'm concerned this could be the biggest liar in the world. I gave it to you because I know I trust you. If something's going to happen, you're not going to lie. I know you. Schmoigli, I don't know Schmoigli. So by doing that, even though you weren't negligent in giving it to Schmoigli, but for me to not get paid because someone's going to swear, I picked you because I know you're not going to lie. So therefore, he says the following. He says to Amarle, he says, Ah, you, guardian number one, Mehem Yeshua, I believe the oath you're going to make. But hi, by that guy, Lo, Mehem Yeshua, I do not believe that guy. And therefore, 25, even an unpaid custodian who gave it to a paid custodian, either way, must swear to the owner of the deposit that he did not commit an act of negligence. Now, a person not legally bound to accept the oath of another, it's only the oath of the custodian that the owner must accept since he trusts him with the deposit. Thus, the owner can claim that he believes that the loss claimed by the second shomer was really due to negligence, and for this reason, the first shomer is liable for any loss. But Let's say third party witnesses testified. Then okay, then they're off the hook, because then we don't have to rely on the second shomer's testimony. So that is becomes the machlokas. So Ula says,
if the first guy
gave it to the second guy,
yeah.
So says Rava, you always got to pay.
Okay.
Why? Because the other guy's going to swear. I don't trust him.
Right.
But let's say he gave it to the second guy, but two other witnesses came along and says, you know, we really saw it was a lightning bolt. Then you're not coming on to that guy, and two witnesses is the gold standard. And the Gemara, again, is unresolved, and that's the notes over here. The notes say, central issue, sugya 11. What is the law if a shomer hands over what was given him to another shomer? Statement of Ula, in the name of Rebbe Lazar, if a shomer handed over what was given to him to another shomer, he's exempt. Elaboration of the statement, not only a shomer chinam who gave to a shomer sacher or elevated the level of guarding is exempt, rather even a shomer sacher who gave to a shomer chinam who lowered the level of guarding is exempt. Why? For he gave it to one with understanding, and let's just add this clause, We'll say like this, understanding, period. Therefore, there was no negligence on the part of the first shomer in giving it to another. That's the point. There's no negligence. He gave it to a normal person. Statement of Rava. If a shomer handed over to another shomer, he is liable. Not only a shomer Sakho gave to a shomer Chinam, who lowered the level of guarding, is liable, for he lowered the level of guarding. Rather, even a shomer Chinam who gave to a shomer Sakho raised the level of guarding is liable, for the apostle can say that he doesn't trust the oath of the second shomer. Resolution again. There's a machlokas. If a shomer hands over was given to him to another shomer, Ula says the name of Rav Elazar, he is exempt. Rava says he is liable. Again, another machlokas. And next week, we go to another off-topic sugya relating to our slaves. Okay, so if you own a slave, is it considered land or is it considered movable property? There's all kinds of different halachas that relate to that, which we'll talk about next week. Yeah, guys.